Today on the Retro Zoo Super Show, we go down into the steam tunnels.
Live from Kakariko Village. Throughout the Retroverse, transmitted to the real world via a maze of wires connecting a Super Nintendo to a Wii, to a Wi-Fi network, and finally to the Internet. The Techno Funk Boy presents the Retro Zoo Super Show. Now here are your hosts, Kai and Steven.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Retro Zoo Super Show. I am one of your hosts, Kai, and we are going to be joined here just a minute by a special guest, Justin Baker from the Retro Warriors podcast, my personal favorite podcast, but also happens to be a retro gaming podcast, and so I'm really excited about having him on today. So we're going to jump into this really quick here. Before we do, let's keep in mind our year-long Patreon rewards that we're doing for 2019, where we are running through the soundtrack of Mega Man 3, and Techno Funk Boy is recording covers of all those songs and putting them on our Patreon page, one a month for any level. And so please do check that out at patreon.com/technofunkboy. And with that out of the way, I guess I could jabber more about all the games I bought, but yeah, I'd rather talk to Justin. So with us on the line right now, Justin Baker from the Retro Warriors podcast. Really appreciate you joining us. Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's always fun to go out and do other shows. It's exciting for me.
So I have not told you this beforehand. I did tell you I was going to fanboy a little bit. But I've literally told people that my retro gaming podcast is my second favorite retro gaming podcast, because Retro Warriors is my first. I think y'all are hysterical. I've been kind of looking for an excuse to have you or both of you on. And a couple of weeks ago, you know, you were talking about Dungeons and Dragons and mentioned that, you know, that topic has been vetoed for the actual show, but to find
vetoed by Saturn.
Right. Yeah. But to find you online and we'll chat about it. And I'm like, hey, I'm in the middle of a Dungeons and Dragons series. Let's have Justin on. So to start off with, if my listeners are not your listeners, they need to be. Can you tell us a little bit about Retro Warriors?
We've been doing the show for, oh my gosh, we're coming up on episode 200. We're in the planning stages of 200, so it's been a while. The way I built it originally was that it was a celebration of retro gaming, because there's people out there that do retro gaming history so much better than we do, because, you know, they're actual historians. But as time has gone on, it's kind of turned into this weird mishmash of like genuine history and research and just Saturn and myself being really weird humans. I guess I would bill it as a retro game comedy show at this point.
Well, and this is why I think that, you know, most of my listeners should be listening to you as well, because we all know the other retro podcast that has a lot of useful information.
Right.
I'm not one of those. You kind of are. And so, yeah, it's I feel like our show is much more about guys hanging out, having a really good laugh, and reminiscing about some retro gaming, some of which that you only started playing last week.
Right. Well, in all of the real history comes from Saturn. We have multiple people that work on the show, and I call him the talent because he. You know, I spend hours on Wikipedia and Cutting Room Floor and Hardcore Gaming 101. All these sites are doing research and playing the games. He just remembers all of it from like 1996. And he's like, oh, yeah, I remember it was a Tuesday. It was raining outside. And I was reading a magazine about the upcoming Final Fantasy. And the man is a steel trap for retro video game knowledge. So,
yeah. And I am. I don't know y'all's exact ages, but I'm closer to his age, and so yeah. I resonate more with his memories. Yeah, on a lot
he's,
of this stuff.
Saturn's and he, I don't believe he'll mind me saying he's 36 and I'm 30, so he's about 6 years older than me. So.
Never mind, I'm a lot older than him. I'm 41, so
Saturn acts older than he is,
that's fair.
We do make fun of his age on the show enough that people probably think. He's ancient, but he's not. I swear, he's a young man.
Oh wow! So yeah, I was. I definitely wanted to. I literally I was listening to y'all while planning this show, and so I've been looking forward to getting y'all on for quite some time, and so I was like, you know, the Dungeons and Dragons movie is the way to go. I did mention we're talking about the movie, right? Not the game.
Hey, yeah, I'm not gonna lie, I'm down for that. I have an affinity for bad movies. I'll talk the D&D movie all day long.
Gosh, I haven't seen it since it was in theater, so
don't. Don't.
Yeah, you would have to handle all of it. I just remember being supremely disappointed and leaving.
So. Yeah, I remember thinking, well, this is a cool fantasy movie. What does it have to do with Dungeons and Dragons again? I don't know why they have that name on it.
It had the unlikely hero, you know, the actually two thieves in the party, which makes zero sense whatsoever, but that's fine. So.
Yeah. It was a strange film. Who was that? Was Ray Liotta in that, or am I misremembering?
Oh my goodness, now I gotta look that up.
He was either the bad guy in that or the bad guy in like one of the Dungeon Siege movies, of which there are more than one, unfortunately.
Are there? I haven't seen those. Goodness.
I believe there's been at least two. There's In the Name of the King, which is the Dungeon Siege movie, and I would swear they made a sequel. I know they made two Blood Rain movies, possibly more than that, but I willed myself to stop paying attention to them after the first one, really.
Right. I don't see Ray Liotta in here, unless I'm just overlooking him. Jeremy Irons in a supreme waste of talent.
It was Jeremy Irons.
Is that who you're thinking of?
Yes. They have nothing to do with each other. I don't know why I'd mix them up, but I did. Yeah. Here you go.
Jeremy Irons and Marlon Wayans should never be in a movie together. Oh, I love both of them for very different reasons, but they should not be in a movie together.
It was a strange time for the Dungeons & Dragons franchise. That's that's for sure.
But we're not going to talk about the movie, despite me doing, like, you know, 10 parts on Dungeons & Dragons and the video games it inspired, because I can't just do one episode on anything. We're not going to cover that at all. I covered the stupid Dragonlance movie in one episode.
Oh, I've never seen that one.
Oh, wow.
Is it bad?
Did you ever read the book?
I was a huge Dragonlance fan growing up, and because of that, I learned to stay away from most related media and just enjoy the books so they could be pristine in my young mind, and so I've not sullied that memory with any venturing forth into movies or anything like that.
Oh, well, so, like, the movie, there's two bad parts to it. First of all, the animation is fine. It kind of looks like it was done in the 80s, like on a budget.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden you get to the Draconians and they're computer animated badly and you're like, wait, this wasn't 1983? What? But then the other thing was, besides Kiefer Sutherland doing Raceland, which was magnificent.
Oh, goodness.
But they had to cut this massive, like, you know, 450-page book down to a little under 2 hours.
Yeah.
And so they cut all the character development, which is... the only reason that book is good.
Right, yeah. I mean, Dragonlance, like, if you want to talk about a cookie-cutter story, here's a great series for you. It is the characters that make that, for sure.
Right, right. And so, yeah, the all of Raceland's development was, you know...
I'm evil now. Right, okay, yeah. See you later.
have you? If somebody says, have you ever met an evil mage? Well, go meet that guy, and that's it. So you're a Dragonlance fan. This tripped me out. First of all, so I downloaded the PDF of the first module, and mm-hmm. and there was 12 that encompassed the first trilogy of books.
Yeah.
And I downloaded it, and they had all the stats for the different characters, mm-hmm. and it had Raceland as like true neutral, and I'm like, mm-hmm. really? Okay. And then it had Tanis as a fighter and not a ranger, and I'm like, okay, I wasn't expecting that one either. I know that's just like he has a bow. He must be a ranger. His ears are pointy.
Could half-elves, could demi-human races be rangers in that edition of D&D?
Oh, I don't even know. I did not play... was that... That had to be... I think that was AD&D first edition.
Yeah, I mean, they started releasing Dragonlance way early as AD&D first edition modules. I've got a few of them in some of the supplements, but... I don't know, because this is also back in the day when not only did not every race could be every class, but each class required different amounts of experience to level up.
Right, yes, yeah.
You know, and yeah, so I don't know that, I think it might have been a weird restriction where they were like, well, he's a half-elf, so he either has to be a human or a fighter. You got to mess it up somehow.
And that could be it. I mean, like, my extent of playing AD&D... mm-hmm. besides like one night when I forced my friends to play it, and none of us had ever played anything, and I had like the beginner set, like a beginner set, and so I was the dungeon master with my first time playing Dungeons and Dragons, and and that was like the only night we ever played, and so like that was my extent, or like Baldur's Gate, Eye of the Beholder, Pool of Radiance stuff, and that's like mm-hmm. my experience with AD&D. So, trying to figure out, it's like, can half elves be this? I don't know.
It's so weird. AD&D's. I absolutely adore AD&D First Edition, and I'm far too young for it. I mean, it came out. I wasn't born for like 15 years after it came out. But I started in third edition. When I was 11 or 12, and then immediately was like, well, I have to go back, because if this is the third one, that means there's two other ones I can go get. And this, of course, was back before everyone on Earth thought D&D was the coolest thing ever, so I just picked up old books for like $1 a piece all
right,
the time.
Right, yeah.
And now they're collectibles, so it's a little different now.
Gosh, I think I bought several books at that time. Mm-hmm. Because I thought that I would be able to convince my friends to keep playing, and we didn't. But yeah. I think I have like a cleric's manual floating mm-hmm. around here somewhere that I don't think I ever actually even looked at.
Yeah. I think I bullied my friends into playing some first edition with me. I was like, no, guys, it's way better. And then I sat down and showed them the game, and they're like, this is just math. You're just making us do very advanced math.
Yeah.
And I always wanted a regular AD&D game, but they're very hard to find, because guess what? Not a lot of people are playing a tabletop game from the 70s anymore. They're playing the new one.
Right, yeah.
And so I never could get that going, but any chance that I could get to play AD&D or any of the clones of AD&D, which I also have many of and enjoy, I'm always chomping at the bit for that.
Well, you know, one thing I keep bringing up to the Dice and Dreary crowd, because we're playing Curse of Strahd, when we're done, maybe we need to break out the original Ravenloft and play that. And everybody's like, grumble, grumble, grumble. So I might be calling you at some point.
If you're looking to convince them, I'm the wrong man to talk to, because I never could convince. I'd go, guys, it's great. No, I swear. Okay, yeah, there's a lot of tables and spreadsheets and stuff. Just calm down. Okay, let me get my abacus, and we're going to come over here with our slide rule and figure this out. It never So
okay,
for me.
So you seem to be attracted to that in the same way that attracted me to the original Dragon Warrior, because that was the first JRPG I ever played. Now, I wasn't allowed to play Dungeons and Dragons as a young man or a teen, and so that, you know, Dragon Warrior was as close as I could get, and when I first, and it was the free Nintendo Power copy, right? And it had all like the cool like cheat cards and maps and stuff.
Oh yeah,
and
it had a ton of ephemera.
Yeah,
oh,
it was
a whole
awesome
bunch of stuff.
And I looked at the tables, and I was like, I don't know what this means, but I love it. This, forget Mario, this is now my favorite.
Yeah, and what's fascinating about Dragon Warrior is they hid. And I mean, we just recently talked about this on an episode of our show, where it's kind of a staple of JRPGs early on that they hide a lot of the math and tables and stuff from you, whereas a lot of Western developed games came from D&D where they didn't hide that. They were like, here's all these numbers, figure it out.
Right.
But games like Dragon Warrior especially were so good at you could look at the table and the charts and everything, but even those weren't that complicated, and you could also kind of ignore them and still sort of be all right.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you could totally screw yourself over by picking the wrong name, because a lot of your stats are based on your name.
Yeah.
I can't
imagine what program was like, oh, we can't get the random stats working. And they're like, well, we need to seed it with something. I don't know. Choose their name.
Yeah.
That's what a goofy workaround.
Gosh. Have you happened to have watched the RNG manipulation speedrun of Dragon Warrior?
No, I've not.
Okay, so this is what they do. And this was developed by Billy Mitchell, who, I'm joking. Y'all have to listen to Retro Warriors to get that one.
Dang it, Billy!
So, no, they figured out the timing of the battles, because basically the game is counting frames, and it will say, okay, you're on frame 4. Let me check the encounter table. 4, no encounter. Great. Mm-hmm. And they figured out how to manipulate it to get very consistent, frame advancement. And so you'll just watch them like walking through the overworld, and then they'll just pause for just a brief moment and keep going. And they just dodged the battle. I'm completely blanking, and we did a show on this. I think it's around 40 minutes beating the entire game.
Oh, wow.
Manipulating the random number generator.
Yeah.
And so they beat it like level 7.
It's insane.
But that's the kind of stuff that the computer's running in the background to make it seem random, because the game can't actually do random.
Right.
And so it's like, let's count frames and let's do a giant encounter table that no one can see. And that's how you do these things.
No, it's fascinating the lengths they went to hide, you know, what a lot of tabletop gamers coming to this would say, they're hiding the game. This is the game, and you're hiding the game part of the game,
right?
Which is manipulating these numbers in a way that is pleasing to me,
right.
And then also talking like a wizard. Like, that's basically what D&D was for, the first 20 years.
British accents, talking like a wizard, being mysterious, enigmatic.
Yeah, and they went to great lengths to hide the game, you know, which I say not disparagingly, but in, you know, just in a, it's odd to me that they went that route, you know, but they seem to really want kids to like it, and it worked in Japan at least.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
I think Dragon Quest is still trying to figure out how to make it work in America, but you know, they'll get it one day.
When they release Dragon Quest 47, and then all of a sudden America's like, what is this series?
Saturn is he's a Dragon Quest fanatic. I've played many of the games, enjoy the games, but they're nowhere near my, you know, top franchises, but it is his absolute number one favorite franchise of all time ever made. And everyone that comes out, the producers always go, well, we'll see how this one sells in America. We'll release it, but they always make it sound like, well, this does really bad. I don't know that we're going to do the next one. And the poor guy almost has a panic attack every time. He's like, everyone buy Dragon Quest, please.
Gosh,
I need him to keep making them.
That's such like a I mean, just such a like codependent, weird, passive aggressive thing.
It is
for them to
aggressive.
Do. It's like, you know, it's like, guys, I don't know. I don't think anybody loves us over here. Maybe if you showed me more love, I'd love you back.
Yeah, it's the game publisher equivalent of fishing for compliments. You know, it's like coming out and being like, well, no one's even going to buy our dumb game. we'll buy it. No, cheer up, Square Enix.
No, it's too late. I'm not going to do another one.
I'm not even going to release the next one. Ugh.
Oh, getting back to topic. Now, you're used to this. What am I talking about? I'm really curious as how you got started into this, into like Dungeons and Dragons and even like board games, because and correct me if I'm wrong, but you are a great fan of tabletop stuff and also video game stuff. But it seems to me that you lean toward the tabletop.
I flip flop. The harsh reality of the situation is that I'm an adult now and my friends live far away and I moved way out in the middle of the country, and getting multiple people around a table to do a thing for many hours on end with no other obligations is just extremely hard to make happen.
Yeah.
But I go through phases of it, you know. I think it's one of those things where video games are a staple of my life. They have just always been there. They have always existed. I've had a Nintendo since I don't ever remember not having one. You know, I was born in 88, so it has existed in my life. It's just this thing. It's this presence. Right. In which isn't to say I'm not passionate about it, you know, but that passion, you know how it is with interests. It waxes and wanes depending on what else you have going on. But tabletop stuff, specifically RPGs and card games, was this grand discovery of mine. You know, I discovered this whole world of these are games, but they're not on my Nintendo. And it was incredible to me that people were simulating these systems that I relied on a computer to do. They were doing on pen and paper on a table. And what I loved about it is, and to backtrack a little bit, I'm a cheater. I cheat at video games. I always have cheated at video games. I always will cheat at video games. I love my Game Genie. I love my Game Genie hint book. I cheat all the time, constantly. I love cheating. It's great.
Everybody check out Retro Warriors.
But what was so fascinating to me about these systems that they were doing on a tabletop, with D&D especially, is you could do whatever you wanted to with it. They built this system, and it wasn't even cheating. It was just playing the game where you could manipulate the entire game however you wanted. And that was amazing to me. And I discovered D&D when I was, I believe I was 12. And we bought the D&D 3rd Edition box set, and to further date myself, we bought it on Amazon. This was back when Amazon had just kind of started being a thing.
Yeah.
It was early 2000s, but it was, you know, they were selling more than just books at that point.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha. All
and, right, so... So we got that, and that's what got us started, was that first third edition box set.
Okay. Now, was that your family or was that your friends?
Well, it was... First, we had to coerce my mother to buy it with her credit card. And we had to, as a group, beg my mom to put her precious credit card number into a computer, which was asinine. That was unheard of.
Yeah,
you want me to put my credit card on the internet? Yeah.
Oh gosh, in 1999, I was working for Barnes and Noble, and we got a ton of business just from people who just didn't trust them internet.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like,
just order the book. I know it would take longer than Amazon, but I don't trust them internet.
Yeah, and so we did eventually convince her, and I think it was $20. That I think they've upped the price for the box sets now to $25, but they were $20. For a long time. And that came in the mail after, you know, 4 to 6 weeks. And it was me and my two friends, and we played through that first scenario in that D&D box set, in which you enter a small dungeon and there's poison soup on the table that someone always drank as if it would do something else. And you were there to save Aliburn the unicorn. He was trapped in this room. You had to save this unicorn. And we played it the first time that, you know, in air quotes, the right way. We go in there and we're valiant heroes. And then we played it again. And then we, like, captured an orc and made him drink the soup. And then we played it again, and we killed Alibern the Unicorn. And then we played it again, and we fought Alibern the Unicorn, and he killed us. And nice. The dynamic nature of this, like, three, it was really like 3 or 4 room adventure. The dynamic nature of that was so fascinating to us. And then we learned, mm-hmm. oh, well, I can just take orcs out and add in a displacer beast or a gelatinous cube or a whole yeah. dragon. Oh, well, you can't fight a dragon? Well, now we're level 30. I didn't have to put in a cheat code or anything. And with that, we were just kind of off and running at that point.
Yeah, yeah. And that's one of the fascinating things with it. It's like I remember, you know, DMing that first game I ever played in my life. And yeah. And somebody and they were actually fighting a gelatinous cube and and not doing well at all.
They are hard to fight.
Yeah,
to
they
be
are.
Fair.
and they were being stupid about it too, which is always fun. But one of them is like, okay, it's your turn. What do you do? And he goes, I take a long sip of alcohol. And I'm like, okay. He goes, and then I get my torch and I breathe fire on it. I'm like. Oh, okay. Well, let's do that then. And it was like the first time that it dawned on me is like, there's a million choices he could have made in this moment, and the video game would have given him 3.
Yeah.
And that's one of them that would not have happened.
It's the hardest thing to teach people is this thing where, because I had a group last year that I ran a couple of adventures for, and I didn't know him. A friend of mine was like, yes, I know a dungeon master, as if he was recommending a plumber. And this group of strangers then contacted me. And I said, yeah, I'll run a game for you. And every one of them struggled so hard. I'd go, it's your turn. What are you doing? They go, what can I do? And I go, anything you want. They go, so I can like fly? And I go, well, no, you can try to fly.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll work. But you can attempt anything you want to attempt. Anything your character would attempt, anything you as a player want your character to attempt, you can do it.
Yeah.
And it's that freedom is for some people it's paralyzing, you
yes,
know, it's this
yes.
thing where they're like, well, I sit here and wait for the game to happen,
right.
And then you're like, no, you don't understand, you are the game, you gotta go there and make it work for you. But yeah, it we were completely enraptured. I remember after getting that box set, we immediately after playing that box set all afternoon, ran out of my house and found sticks and were basically LARPing in this like construction zone near my house. We were so amped up on this like D&D fantasy high
yes,
that we
yes.
just couldn't take it. We, you know, we had to like go out and be adventurers ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's, it's kind of fun for me playing with people who are new, because a lot of people are just paralyzed by it. But a lot of people, you just see that twinkle in their eye when it happens, and
yeah.
it takes a little while, and then they do something that's not expected and it works.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't work, but it's still funny.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
This is amazing. You know?
As a dungeon master, it's exhilarating the first time a new player that has been paralyzed goes, can I blank? And it's always like, can I frisbee a dinner plate into this
yes.
guy's face? Or can I do a backflip off this table and stab this guy with both my swords? It's always, can I? And it's so exciting to be able to go, yeah, but I mean, give me a roll. But yeah, you definitely can. And even if you fail, you know, on your backflip, something interesting will still happen.
Yes.
And so many times in video games that are, you know, games that build themselves as these open, free worlds, you'll do something that is a dead-end decision tree, and the game just has to go, yeah, well, there's nothing there, so sorry. And in D&D, because you have a referee, because you have a dungeon master, they can go, well, it's not in the book, but how about this happens?
Right.
And it sparks that creativity in people.
Yeah, 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 that's it exactly. I remember playing Fable, and it was like the first one of those games that had the morality system.
Mm-hmm.
I know it wasn't the first one that had it, but it was the first one I played.
Yeah. I feel like it was a real watershed moment
it really was.
Morality games, for sure.
Yeah. And it was like, at the beginning, it was just like, this is so cool. And then you get to the last town, and like literally every woman in town flocks around you and some of the guys and immediately starts saying, I think I need a ring now. And I'm like, I don't even know your name. And it's like, there's nothing you can do about that to make this come out right. And And it's like, it's so great having, I mean, just that DM role that, you know, you're kind of the pressure valve of this thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
That, you know, if the tables are leading us in one direction and you're like, that's not fun. Mm-hmm. Let's not do that then.
Yeah, you know, you can just on a whim go, oh, well, this happens now. Oh, now the tavern's on fire. Oh, bandits attack. Whatever you want. And you're right. Empowered to do so by the scenario in most cases. And it's this, even board games. I still love board games with an they always refer to them as overlord, as an overlord role in board mm-hmm. games. You know, Descent, Conan, the new Batman game that just came out. I love those overlord roles where you get to referee the game.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so interesting to me, and just what can come out of, you know, players who are very willing to kind of go where their imagination takes them, and a DM who's willing to facilitate that. It's amazing.
Absolutely, it's a lot of, because I don't notice it so much anymore with newer. Because D&D is very much in this golden age, this renaissance. It's more popular and profitable than it has ever been in the history of time. It's so much bigger right now, and I don't think a lot of newer people and even older fans of D&D understand how much bigger and more profitable it is than it was previously. But because of that, you know, everyone wants to experience everything. But when I was a kid, there were, you know, like, I was a dungeon master. I didn't play D&D. I almost never actually played the game. I was a dungeon master. That was the role I assumed. And then any time we had a new group get together where we go, oh, we're going to play D&D, it wasn't even like, well, who's going to run it? It was like, well, Justin's going to run it because he's the dungeon master.
Yeah.
You know, and there would be small... There was one other guy that would sometimes play dungeon master. And a lot of people don't seem to understand what what a dungeon master gets out of D&D. Because it's hard to explain, like... The thrill and the excitement and satisfaction of running a game, when you explain it on paper, it sounds boring. It's like, well, you know, you're the monsters and you sell them potions and stuff.
Hey, you get to do accents. Accents, come on.
And it's such a fascinating role that you don't see in video games really at all. I mean, you kind of, there's no point in having a dungeon master, a referee type role, because Why would you? That's why you're playing a video game, is to not have to have one.
Right, exactly, yeah. And that has always been me, too. Now, I wasn't ever able to play that much, and I think that's why I lean toward video games a lot more, is because, you know, I didn't know anybody who would play D&D with me, or, you know, really cool board games, and so it was like, okay, well, I'll play some video games. But whenever I was able to convince people to play, I was always the game master. And I always had a blast with it. It's that indefinable, you know, thrill of it that, you know, it's like, well, I'm looking up charts, but it's fun, I swear.
Yeah, but they're fun charts. It's great. You know, it's interesting, too, because before, and really, even when I was a kid, because in the 80s, D&D, it got a bad rap.
Yep, and that's why I wasn't allowed to play Satanic Panic and all.
Yeah, the Satanic Panic was a real thing, and it wasn't just D&D. It was Satanic Panic, you know, nationwide here in America, and a lot of people were put in jail and accused of Satanism. It was a real weird, crazy time. At least, as a bonus, we got the best Tom Hanks movie, Mazes and Monsters, out of it.
But I still haven't seen that. I really need to.
Oh, my gosh. You have to. It's so terrible. I love it so much. I can't. And anyone I play D&D with, I'm like, have you seen Mazes and Monsters? And they go, no. And I go, all right, well, you got to watch it, or I'm not going to run the game for you. So you have to. I have it on DVD. I'll loan it to you. You got to watch it. But for a long time, in the 80s, D&D was this thing where if you played it, you kind of kept it hush-hush. And even in that permeated through the 90s and even the early 2000s, where D&D, it wasn't this thing where you were even that worried about getting made fun of. It was just this thing where people, anytime you'd mention it, oh, I played Dungeons & Dragons, they'd be like, oh, so you worship Satan? Like, was a genuine response that even I got in the early 2000s from people. And, of course, I was like, well, no. I mean, I might in the game if it comes up, but I don't, you know, no. But it wasn't a cool thing to do, which it is now.
Right. I got the same thing when I was in college in the late 90s when I was finally able to just twist some arms to play. But the people I played with were just talking about the experience in front of some friends, and we got the same result. The same kind of you're opening yourself up to demons, right?
Right.
I don't see how that works, but okay.
And it may be different here because I'm in Texas. I believe you're in Texas as well. We are in the Bible Belt. Things are a little different here sometimes,
and
it may be just that it went on longer than it did. If you're out in California, you're probably like, "What are you talking about? I have no idea. We played in the '90s; it was fine. It kind of wasn't always fine here."
Right, to be fair, it's like I was in Texas at a Baptist university. I'm from a religious background and remain religious. These are things that are in the atmosphere, and I was part of that, so I can't really blame people, because this is something that I was swept up into as part of that culture in the 80s, until I actually started looking into things and like, wait a minute, this doesn't actually do the things that Jack Trick in his Chick Track says.
Those are a fun read. If anyone out there is a D&D fan, you have not read those comics, oh man, read them. Holy cow, what a laugh.
I am waiting to insert lines into Dice and Dreary from that comic. It's like when I just at some point, because my character's name is Crethin in that, and I'm just like, I don't want to be Crethin anymore. I'm just gonna do it, and everybody will know. By the way, and this is not a drill, ladies and gentlemen, Mazes and Monsters is on Amazon Prime.
Oh my gosh! It's amazing. I bought it on DVD. I had no idea what it was. I found it in one of the like $2 DVD bins at Walmart over 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I picked it up. I was like, Mazes and Monsters. That sounds like Dungeons and Dragons, but dumber. Yep. And it is.
Yes.
Oh, it's great.
And for those people who don't know, this was like a real event in the 80s where this dude who played a lot of D&D just up and disappeared. Mm-hmm. And they thought that he had gone down into these tunnels underneath, I think, the university or something.
They were steam vents.
And they thought he went down there to basically the LARP by himself, because that's what nerds do.
Yeah, LARPing by yourself, the greatest pastime.
In all honesty, I totally would have done that. But but this became like a nationwide panic, and this mm-hmm. kind of fueled the satanic panic. And they eventually found the guy in like Australia or something weird. That had never happened. This was never a thing. He just walked away. So they made this movie based on that with Tom Hanks, and it is on Amazon Prime, and I will report back to our listeners next episode.
Oh, it's so good. Oh man. I'm envious of you that you get to experience Mazes and Monsters fresh for the first time. Oh boy.
Oh gosh. Oh.
But yeah, eventually D&D board games is kind of a newer thing for me. I played board games growing up, but was not, in air quotes, into board games.
Yeah.
Until the last few years, when it became a situation where D&D just, I still have an active game. I run an active game, but it's online. It's barely a few hours a month. It's just us cramming in this into any slot that we can, getting it just a little tiny bit of D&D time. And we play via Fantasy Grounds. So board games have kind of become a conduit for me getting that out, this weird energy that I need to get out. And I've been funneling that into board games, because it's easier to get someone to sit down and commit to a couple hours than it is to go, hey, you're going to play D&D? All right, well, this campaign will be about a year and a half every single week of your life until it's over for 6 hours at a time.
Right,
so we'll see you there, so that's where, how my interest had changed in the last few years.
Yeah, we're about to start the same. My friends and I are about to start kind of one of those monthly type of games. We're going to be doing a Star Wars: Edge of the Empire.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Um, And it is one of those things. It's like everybody's like so excited. They're like, "Yeah, you want to meet weekly?" I'm like, "Yes, I do." That's not going to happen.
Yeah, it'll never happen. I've been playing for over 15 years now. Because if I started when I was 12 and I'm 30, but I think the number of like consistent weekly games that everyone showed up to for more than a month straight, I can count on one hand.
Yeah.
It just does.
Yeah, for sure.
It is a disaster to schedule D&D. Yeah.
This is what drives everybody to video games.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I'm always looking for that D&D experience in video games, and I've yet to find it. I still have not found it.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that one day the technology is there, but it just so far everything falls short of D&D, which isn't to slight. I mean, again, I love video games. I'm passionate and excited about video games. They're wonderful. But if I'm looking for something that scratches that same itch, it's not out there yet.
Yeah. 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 It's like a few weeks ago we did our episode on Baldur's Gate, which is one of my favorite games of all time.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic
and,
game. Yeah.
And rules wise, it is AD&D. But it's not D&D. It scratches the video game itch. It does not scratch the Dungeons and Dragons itch.
Right. And again, even if you're not the Dungeon Master, the interactivity that you get from the Dungeon Master, that relationship just can't exist with a computer. I mean, maybe an advanced artificial intelligence, maybe. But I just don't, and some designer out there is going to prove me wrong one day, I'm sure. But I don't see how that relationship can exist in a video game.
Yeah. And one thing that those like the AD&D video games prove, like Polar Radiance or Baldur's Gate, is if you've never DM'd AD&D and you want to know how many times your DM fudged rolls, just one of those games and how quick you just die.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, and this was the thing was to get into some D&D history. D&D was originally, it was a survival game, is what we would call it today. If AD&D First Edition came out today as a hot new product from Hasbro, and then they would call it a survival game. This is a survival game. You need to get as much. And you are not encouraged to fight monsters either, which is weird. Which is why one gold equaled one experience. You were there to get the treasure and get the fudge out. You weren't there to fight monsters because monsters would kill you.
Right, yeah.
You were just supposed to get the thing and leave. So when you get to a video game and they go, well, how do we do that in a video game? If you don't fight the monsters, then what do you do? And, you know, in a game where you just dash in, grab loot, and dash out isn't fun. That's just called speed running.
Right.
So, you know, it's a hard translation to games like, you know, all those BioWare games. It's a hard translation where... Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, it's a game about fighting monsters, but that's not what the game was designed to do.
Yeah.
So you have to modify it, and then all of a sudden, you're modifying a system in which the monsters are supposed to kill you a lot of the time.
Right.
And it's problematic, you know.
And me, the first time I played Baldur's Gate, I didn't have any experience with actual D&D, and so I went into it trying to play it like Final Fantasy. And that definitely doesn't work.
No, it certainly does
it's
not.
Like, it's like, let's clear this map of monsters. That's a bear.
Yeah, it's so different. And and certainly D&D has evolved over the years. Most notably, it's no longer a survival game. It's a power fantasy is what D&D is, which I don't get me wrong. I love 5th edition. I adore it. I even love 4th edition, which it makes me a rarity among D&D fans. Yeah. But it's changed. You know, originally it was this thing where it was like, are you able to get into the dungeon and get out with the treasure? Let's find out. You're going to die a whole lot of times. And and these days people sit down and they write these huge backstories and they're worried about like metagame. And well, I don't want to bring in outside game knowledge into my character's knowledge. And I want to act according to the story. Back then it was about player skill. You know, is your player smart enough to solve this puzzle? Whereas these days a dungeon master might go, Well, you know how to solve it as a player, but your character doesn't know that information.
Yeah.
And those, yeah. You know, I think people forget that about D&D back in the 70s and early 80s.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I this is the first time I've been playing 5th edition. I absolutely adore it.
It's a great system. Yeah.
And it's as, you know, like as character driven story, you know, mm-hmm. and it, if I'm looking for that survival game, I'm not going to 5th edition. But like the first time we went through it, it's like, and oh goodness, my DM is going to literally kill my character because I say this, but it's hard to die.
It is, especially at higher levels, because we're running Tomb of Annihilation, and we are in the Tomb of Annihilation. We've been there for many months. Mm-hmm. And it is very hard to kill them. I try very hard, and it does not happen. And it's strange, you know. And I do love 5th edition. A lot of my love for 5th edition comes from the fact that they removed the majority of the rules.
Yes.
And that leaves it open for you to kind of hack it and do whatever you want with it.
Yeah.
You can run D&D as that survival game that D&D used to be, and you don't have to tweak much. I mean, remove death saving throws, done. Now it's a meat grinder. You know, that's all you right. have to do.
Yeah, exactly.
And it doesn't break anything else. You know, the systems like 3rd edition and the D20 system in 4th edition, everything was so interconnected that if you're like, well, let's remove that, well, all of a sudden all these other systems collapse because they're connected to it, you know?
Right.
And then you're pretty much building your own tabletop RPG, and then you're like, well, I'll just go do that because that'd be easier than doing something to this.
Yeah, and I guess that does bring us to today. So, you know, you're continuing on with 5th edition, enjoying it, and I know the magic of D&D kind of changes when you're more experienced.
Yeah.
But so what is it about today that you just really love about the game?
I really get a kick out of watching people solve puzzles that I know the answer to. It sounds very narcissistic to say that, but it's fascinating to watch people's thought processes as they're looking at this puzzle, and you're on the other side of the screen, and you know exactly what to do, and you know the answer, and you know how they're supposed to get the answer and how they're supposed to find the clues. And it becomes this weird back and forth where the entire game turns into this game, this like smaller game of adjusting difficulty on the fly. All right, they're at this puzzle. Okay, they're trying to figure it out. And it's interesting to watch how they try to figure it out. And then you're watching, and you come to this realization dawns on you. You go, they're never going to get this. It's literally never going to happen. they're so wrong that they can't even get near the right answer.
Yeah.
So I have to do something. So then all of a sudden, as they're discussing, you're on the fly tweaking rules and situations and encounters, moving things around. Which I don't recommend unless you're a more experienced DM, because it's hard to know, like, well, what can I kind of move around? Because you can kind of break stuff still, just story-wise, things will start to get weird. And all of it behind this air of faux confidence, where you're like, well, of course you got through the dungeon, I was running it. When in your head, you're freaking out. Because everything's broken, no one can figure out the right answer, they're all going to die, and they passed all of the clues, and then they broke the other clues because they didn't know what they were. Right. And you're like, oh my god, this is a train on fire going off a cliff. And then at the end of it, they still come out triumphant, and it's very satisfying. For anybody that likes puzzles, it's almost like this Tetris thing where it's this puzzle that's just constantly going and getting harder and dropping new blocks in. You just have to arrange everything and make everything look nice. And that's what I get out of D&D now, very much that, which also means that I'm a more tactical, combat heavy, dungeon heavy, puzzle heavy dungeon master. I know some people that play D&D and they don't even roll for combat. It's all, they're just basically telling a collective story. Which is great, but that's not where I get my kicks in D&D. I like you to be in a dungeon solving a puzzle with like a gelatinous cube behind you and a big boulder rolling down a hill towards you while you're trying to figure out a lock that's basically a 2D Rubik's Cube. That's what I like. And so that's the, so we're playing Tomb of Annihilation, which is basically, you know, 300 hours of that. So it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Okay. So this, I may have heard this from you. I don't think so though. So just take credit for it, whether you did or not, but I, you know, one of the disadvantages of having like, having these actual play podcasts and having like Critical Role and stuff like this, stuff I love, is that all of a sudden now there's a certain type of way to DM because you're watching people do it. And before this stuff happened, it was just, you know, it was just you and your friends, and whoever got the DM book was kind of like, okay, well, this is what we're doing. And you had that air of confidence that you described is great, because DMing is really, it can be very difficult, especially in certain circumstances. And the one thing that you really can't do is go, hold on, guys.
Yeah. You, and even when you do mess up, the best tool that a DM has at their disposal is confusion. Because sometimes you will forget to say something, and you'll go, oh, and don't forget blank. And they'll go, you didn't tell us that. And you go, oh, yeah, I did. Y'all were just talking. And you know, you just have to, because you don't want them to know that you're like, oh, man, guys, I'm so sorry. I totally messed up. I you know. Yeah. But I am glad that you bring that up, because I you know, and this isn't to disparage any actual play podcasts or Critical Role or your actual play podcast.
If you do, I will delete this interview.
But I very much dislike the notion that there is a correct way to DM, because like you said, there's not. Finding a DM is like finding an artist. You just find one that does it the way you like, and then you connect. And one of my favorite D&D content creators on YouTube is Matt Colville. And Matt Colville talks about, he says, not every player is right for every game. And that's okay. Sometimes you'll play a game with the DM and you go, you know what, I just don't like the way you run it. And the thing to note is that for a DM to change their DM style, sometimes that takes the fun out of the game for them. And it puts you in a situation where either the DM or the player is going to have a bad time. And there's nothing wrong with just going, hey, you don't do it the way I think I want it to be done, or vice versa. You know, you're playing in a way that is in direct opposition to how I want to run the game. Maybe you're like trying to spin this story and I'm just wanting you to fight monsters, or the reverse.
Right.
And that's okay. For anyone out there getting into D&D or wanting to play D&D, if you go play a game at a store, like an Adventurers League thing or whatever, or a sanctioned event, and you go, oh, I don't think I like this at all, that's like listening to one song on the radio and going, oh, I don't like music.
Right,
exactly. It's just,
yeah.
there's a sea of different options and styles and DMs. And I see people complain a lot online. They go, I've been running D&D for years, and suddenly everyone's interested, and they come to play at my table, and they go, oh, well, you don't do it like they do on Critical Role.
Yep.
And you don't do it like Matt Mercer does it, and that crushes some people, because they're like, well, I'm not Matt Mercer. Why would I run a game like him? Just go watch his game if you want that, you know?
Yeah.
Everyone has to find their own style and way to play, and that's such an integral part of the game to me. It's extremely important.
Yeah, and that's a great point, because it's like, you know, it's like we all have fun of making fun of murder hobos.
Yeah.
And for those who don't know the term, murder hobos is a player that just goes wandering around place to place and just randomly murders people because they haven't
for
had
their,
a fight
for their
while.
Loot. You kill them for their loot. You just walk into a town and you go, I will buy all of these things and then kill you and then take all the other things and then goodbye. There's nothing you can do. Ha ha.
Right. Yeah. We make fun of murder hobos because there's always that guy.
Right.
But it's okay to be a murder hobo in a group of murder hobos with a DM who likes to murder hobo. That's
Absolutely.
Great. Do it. Do Absolutely. It. Just don't go to a, don't, you know, don't try to enforce murder hoboism on a group that wants to be more character and story driven.
Right. Just go find a different group. There's nothing. Yeah. And sometimes it takes a while to find the right group. I would say it's probably harder now because now there are so many groups, but so many of them, seem to be trying to do the Critical Role Matt Mercer thing, which is fine. If they like that, more power to them. Great. I don't personally like that style. I have no problem with how he runs the game, and they enjoy it, and so many other people enjoy it, and that's okay. But I hope that anybody getting to the game is aware that it's just a sea of possibilities. There's so many ways to run it, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. And now with the actual ability to play these games online, it's easier than ever to find a group. They do, if you have a local game store, they can connect you to groups.
Absolutely.
Even if you're like me and all your friends are like dorks, but not in the good way of like playing games and being cool like that. Just kind of pathetic dorks. I'm not talking about anybody particular. there are games going on around you. If there's not, there are games going on online and there's so many of them. If your style's not meshing, if you're looking for Matt Mercer, there are plenty of them out there. If you're looking for something else, there's plenty of them out there. And there's a lot of DMs who just want to play because get a lot of enjoyment out of it.
Oh yeah, one of my good friends, he works on the show with me, Andrew. We do on our Patreon. We have an exclusive show, and he co-hosts it with me. So if anybody listens to our stuff, they've probably heard of him. He, when he runs D&D games, he literally makes it up as he goes. The whole game, I mean everything.
Yeah,
it's like playing a procedurally generated dungeon coming out of one man. It's amazing the way he does it. I can't do that because I'm not, you know, like the Rain Man of D&D. But he ran a group and he did that for years. They would just show up and I'd be like, oh, what did you prepare? What did you do? Did you do this? And he's like, I don't know. I'm just going to figure it out when they show up. And it was just this great chemistry between him and his group where they would try to do things in such a way that would lead him into the next story beat. And it was just this wonderful cohesion. And I had the opportunity to play with them a few times. And it was just this beautiful symbiotic relationship where they weren't even aware they were engaged in it. Because they were, that was all their first game, and they were like, "What, you mean everyone doesn't do it this way?" I'm like, "No, almost no one does it that way, and it's insane to me that y'all are able to, and it's wonderful."
Yeah, yeah. Like I don't do that, but Jeff my DM has been teaching me kind of how to do kind of the minimum preparation type approach.
That's where I'm at. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like so much, it's so freeing and it works for me, and it doesn't work for everybody, you know, but it works for me. And it's like, it does take that frustration out of, you know, I prepared this all week.
And you didn't do it right.
And then you took a left turn and I never was that DM that, like, you know, grabbed my dice and walked out of the room.
Yeah.
I always smiled and went with it, but inside is like, if you took a right, it was really cool.
Yeah. It's the way I explain D&D to newer players is you're not showing up to experience my story that I made. One, that's way too much work for any one human.
Yes.
Two, if I wanted to do that, I would just write a book and make you read it. And
welcome to D&D. Here's your script.
It just never works that way. A DM sets a stage, and the players are the actors. And without the actors, there's no play. Or if the actors just show up and stand there on the stage and go, I don't know, I go to the inn and drink beer, then there is still no play. Unless they enjoy just role-playing, drinking beer, which if you like that and your group likes that, then awesome. Great. But it's the players are the driving action, and any good DM will tell you that you can't railroad players. You can't tell them where to go. You can't drive them somewhere, again, unless that group likes that. But for the most part, the players show up to be the actors in a play, you know, and so the DM, you reach a point where you can't over-prepare, you know, I try to tell people, you can only do so much. Eventually, you have to stop and go, but I don't know, I gotta see what they're gonna do, I have no idea.
Then learn how to improvise.
Yeah, a lot of it is improvising. I learned how to improvise and how to lie. Those are your two skills as a DM, is making stuff up, and then just suddenly randomly rolling dice and acting really serious, and then going, okay, keep going.
Right.
It's all a smokescreen.
My favorite DM moment is just to roll a die.
or this one where you go, hey, hold on, what race are you? Okay. All right, that's good. Oh. Can you roll a D20? No, no modifiers. You don't get any modifiers. Just roll it. A 7. Okay. All right, y'all, you'll go ahead. No, no, you're fine. Go ahead. It's fine. No, nothing happened. I didn't say anything happened. Just go. Just I said nothing happened. It's wonderful. It's just wonderful.
Oh, that's great. Oh, goodness. Well, I've kept you over. I really do appreciate you hanging out with me. And
yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, y'all check out Retro Warriors. And I don't spend nearly enough time in y'all's Discord, cause it's really fantastic. It's my goal in life to have our Discord, you know, half as active with randomness as y'all's.
It's so much fun. It gets weird, but it's so much fun. And people are so wonderful to show up and chat with us and hang out. And, we have such minimal rules that my first thought was like, cause I spent years in IRC. I was like, this is going to be a disaster. And everyone has just been so nice and funny and accommodating and interested and engaged. I literally all day long, every day I'm sitting in Discord, just chatting with people. It's been magnificent.
That's great. So, for sure. And if y'all need links, I will put them in the description, but you know where to get podcasts because you are listening to this. If you don't know how this works yet, it's probably some lady who doesn't even like gaming.
Yeah,
it's like,
I don't know how
it said zoo in the title. I thought this was going to be about animals.
Yeah. Google navigate to the zoo. Oh, what is this? What's happening? No, all of our stuff is retrowarriors.net. You can hit, there's all links and all that jazz all at the top. So that's everything we have is, I think we're in most podcast repositories.
Yes, yeah, for sure. All right. Yeah. Justin, thank you so much. I had a blast, so I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I never get to talk about D&D because Saturn falls asleep. So it's been fantastic for me. Thank you for letting me gush about it for as long as I have.
All right, now don't, and I don't know if he's going to listen to this or not, but one day I'm going to have both of y'all on.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't want him to know about this ahead of time, but I'm just going to say, and now for some housekeeping and see if it's like, if it's like just a reaction.
It's reflexive.
For him.
Yeah. I don't think he knows he even does it. I think it just comes out in the recording that way.
When he says it, I'll just start laughing. He'll be like, what did I do? yet another joke y'all will have to listen to Retro Warriors to get.
There you go.
But that's kind of the point, to send y'all over there. So, all right, appreciate it. And hopefully, yeah, we'll have you back soon and talk about a video game so Saturn will come.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Retro Zoo Super Show is brought to you by the Technopunk Boy. Follow us on Twitter at Technopunk Boy, on Facebook at the Technopunk Boy, and sign up for our email list at technopunkboy.com. Also look for us on Spotify, iTunes, and Amazon for music. If you are so inclined, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on your favorite podcast catcher. If you are not so inclined, you are obviously some sort of villain trying to conquer the world. Unowned music and new play clips are used for educational and critical purposes. Thank you for listening. Keep gaming. And unless you have responsibilities that need to be done at this time, then you can game later.